time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. The two big stories of the week, friends, Manafort and Cohen. Crime, conspiracy, or what do you think there? More immunity deals are being handed out like candy these days, it seems. And then Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, and President Trump go at it again. We'll pick those stories up. And you see the investigations leading forward with Duncan and Collins, the two representatives of the GOP. Are these random investigations or targeting of political adversaries before an election? We will talk about that today. And then, sadly, the murder of Molly Tibbetts, killed by an illegal alien that has caught the attention of the nation again. We have a special tribute to her as well on the show today. And if you've been following these stories with the Catholic Church, the Pope speaks out and he says that it's time to end the cover-up of these repugnant crimes of priests who have raped and molested children, and vowed that he was committed to ending the scourge. We'll see what that's all about here, friends. Let's get to the top of the show here and welcome on, please. Colonel Jim Warshuk is here. He's retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He served as deputy director for intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. Also joining us is Jennifer Breeden. She's an attorney and the president of Breeden Law International, focusing on legal consulting, international policies with a special focus on human rights. So this week we had the trial resolutions in the Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen cases. Now, Manafort was found guilty on 8 of the 18 charges. And Michael Cohen, he pleaded guilty in a plea bargain to 8 counts, including tax fraud and improper campaign contributions. Of course, waiting in the wings, you got to remember, friends, is the second trial of Manafort in Washington, D.C., and that's coming pretty fast as well. And on top of all this, let's not forget, the midterm elections are a stone's throw away now. They'll be coming real fast here as this thing revs up here. So, Colonel Warshuk, let's start off here. The events of this past week specifically, how do you think they play out, first of all, with this concept of President Trump sitting down with Robert Mueller? Does this sort of nix that, do you think, the events of this past week? Or do you think that's still a possibility?
Well, I have to go along and defer to what Rudy Giuliani said, where that's not going to happen. And I know we've heard for months and months that the president had continuously talked about wanting to sit down with him. I think that was part deception to show what he thinks and what he knows. And I think he knows a heck of a lot more of what's going on than he leads most of us to believe. And that's all by design. Giuliani speaking this week where he said, they advised him not to meet. But prior to that, we continuously heard Trump saying he was going to sit down and meet with him. Right. I think it's always been in the cards that he wasn't, but he wanted to see where this would go and see what the political left would say whenever he talked about sitting down. It almost made their lips smack because they were so excited because they're so into somehow turning the tables on him. And, you know, you've heard CNN and all the rest talk about, well, if he sat down with him, he could indict himself and things like that. And as I've always said, he's 2 or 3 steps ahead of everything. And I think just part of the effort to throw raw meat out, so to speak, to the media and let them see what they do with it. And sometimes it reveals some other things of what they're thinking.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And I want to come back to that a little bit later when we get to Jeff Sessions, Colonel, because there are a lot of people out there in the public square who would believe what you just said is very accurate. That, and I'm glad you said it, that the president is probably a couple of steps ahead of this or knows a lot more than we think he knows. Obviously, there's a lot more to this whole story than any of us know. It's hard to keep following this story. Jennifer, it gets more interesting or some people would even say weirder every week that goes by. Let's talk a minute about these payoffs here a minute. So a lot of legal minds have commented and said the payoffs to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal are not criminal acts, of course, unless campaign funds were used. And even in that case, only like if it was an incident and misuse of campaign funds, if you will. Talk to me on that point specifically, Jennifer. Does this amount to a big nothing or a serious issue for the president, do you think?
I don't think it's as serious an issue. Again, you know, I agree with the colonel. I agree with some of the voices that have stated that Trump knows a lot more than he's pretending that he knows and that he's letting on that he knows. In terms of campaign funds and payoffs, things like that, I don't think that this particular issue is a serious issue legally, because, yes, there have been way too many articles to count about where the payoffs, where the money is coming from. Was it the Trump Foundation? Did Trump Foundation use that? So basically what the anti-Trump or the Trump is criminal payoff voices, where they're coming from is the fact that a lot of Trump's campaigning, they're trying to prove that his campaign funds came in part from money that was belonging to the Trump Foundation. Right. So they're saying that. And the Trump Foundation money was also used to pay off Stormy Daniels. So they're trying to bridge it together. And it's a lot of very long bridges here. It's a big stretch to try to show that. But you really can't prove in any way that campaign funds were used for Stormy Daniels. I haven't seen enough evidence to that to amount to a legal wrongdoing.
The other thing this week, guys, is the media shouts. It's been a frenzy, like 24/7, like crazy bombardment on the airwaves about everywhere about impeachment. We got to impeach the president. They half the time they don't know what the hell they're impeaching him on, but they certainly know they want to impeach him. It begins to understand, like, do the American people really understand what's going on here and that they want Trump out of the swamp? They want him gone. Clearly, there's a lot of people who would say, you know, something's up with all that. Now, you know, the big questions are, how will this affect the upcoming midterm elections? Keep that in mind now. And the continuing Mueller investigation after, you know, again, 18 months of no evidence of Russia collusion with the Trump campaign at all. These trials now, you know, it's getting interesting, Colonel Warshak, because, you know, the President Trump's policies, they're effective. They're working for a lot of the people out there. His popularity is doing well enough considering all of this, you know, barrage of negativity that's after him.
Quickly mention one point, and you hit on it. This all was about Russia collusion. It's no longer about it. Obviously, there's no evidence. And so what the American people are seeing is watching this out of control special counsel go down every road he can to find something, and he's indicting and putting in jail people, not Trump. He's putting in people who are associates with Trump, Mueller and others, General Flynn, but they had nothing to do with the Russia collusion. Everything is tied to something else. They're going down the road of ridiculous things. Taxes, and I'm talking about Manafort, and all these other things. And American people are sitting there and they're fed up with, wait a minute, this is wasting our time. That's all we hear. Are we going to go down this road of another 6-year-long Watergate trial? That's ridiculous. I think it's really turning off the people. And I think what we're really seeing with Trump here, as I said, he knows what's going on, but he keeps things so close to the vest. We're never going to hear. We're never going to be able to have reports speculating of what he's really doing. So what we're getting is all this stuff out there that just floods the ozone of innuendo and rumor and speculation. And that's what Trump wants. Part of the strategy is to tell Manafort and Cohen and all these guys, just go along with it. Let's see where they go with it. Let's see where Mueller takes it.
Right.
Don't worry. You're all going to be pardoned and everything will be okay. You're taking one for the team, and they're going to go down these ridiculous paths with all kinds of spurious things that it's going to make Americans' heads explode because they're tired of.
The question I have specifically, Jennifer, is this. Has the Mueller investigation, I mean, would you agree it's become totally politicized at this point? And should it be ended, in your opinion? Should it be ended? And if so, by who and when?
All right. Well, that's kind of a loaded question, so I'll try to take it piece by piece. One, if we're going along with the idea or the mindset that was just discussed you know, 2 seconds ago on the show here, is that let's see how far they go with this. Let's see what they do with this. Or the fact that Trump might know something that he's not putting on to the rest of us, perhaps something that we can't even guess or figure out. You know, it's not to say that this should end. I'm actually thinking about some of the statements that came out from jurors that were on the Manafort trial. One juror in particular, the one that was featured on Fox, she came out saying, I'm still a supporter of Trump. I've always been a supporter of Trump. You know, nothing's changed that. She said she had to look at the evidence that was presented to her, regardless what that was. I think that shows great faith in the jury system. But she also said that most of the jurors in there were just sitting there arguing and talking about how much they hate Trump. And she asked them to stop. You know, a lot of these things have come out. So I think that, you know, we're now looking at this stuff. We're seeing that Trump has not stopped this. Maybe he could have. Maybe he could have fired Sessions, gotten somebody in there that was stronger, shut down Manafort. Maybe he could have talked to Manafort. I mean, there's a lot of things that maybe he could have gone out and done. Yes, he's tweeted his displeasure with it, but he hasn't stopped it. He hasn't done anything more to stop it. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows his character in that I have nothing to hide. I don't care. You can try to say you're going to come after me. Mm-hmm. You can try to say that this ties you to me, but I have nothing to hide. And I think that's showing his thing. He has every right to not talk to Manafort, to not sit down. But I think that he should continue to what he's saying is let it keep going until a point where it gets so ridiculous. One, that the American people, even that didn't care about Trump before, are now supporting him because of how sick and tired they are of hearing about this.
Right.
Let it keep going until that point where you say, OK, you've done enough. You started with Russia. Now you're down to ridiculous tax things and how much these people's jewelry is worth that worked for me at some point in history.
Right.
You know, once it gets to that point, you know, show the true colors of the anti-Trump, you know, everybody, what they're talking about, show their colors, let them prove how ridiculous they become. Maybe it's getting close to that point. It's not there yet. But until then, right now, he's showing that I can tell you my opinion on something, but I don't have to stop it because I have nothing to hide.
Yeah,
I don't have to testify because I'm not a part of this. It'd be like if one of my employees got convicted of a crime and then them coming after me because I hired that person. It just makes no sense.
Okay, that's well said. I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying, Jennifer, and I think you're right. I think you're spot on with what he's doing. What the strategy is, I would agree with what you're saying there. All right, before I turn, I've got just a moment left on this topic. I want to talk about Jeff Sessions in a moment. But real quickly, back to your point just a moment ago, Jennifer. And I want to talk specifically about the immunity deals because as the wagons are circling Trump here and what they're trying to do here, let's talk about two specifically quickly. Alan Weisselberg, this was the very longtime Trump Organization CFO. Now, he was granted immunity in the Cohen probe. Now, remember, Weisselberg, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, it's a CFO, Trump Organization. He was called to testify before a federal grand jury in the investigation earlier this year, by the way, to remind people of this. You may or may not know that. But the decision by prosecutors in the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office to grant this immunity to Weisselberg is another very, very interesting development. Remember as well, Weisselberg had served for decades as the executive vice president and CFO of Trump Organization. And after Trump was elected, he handed control of his financial assets, not only to the two sons, but to Weisselberg. So this is a big relationship. And now he has immunity. And then you've got, you know, David Pecker, the head of the National Enquirer. He's been granted immunity, and that's become almost a National Enquirer story in itself this past week here. These are a couple of big deals. Does this escalate the pressure on Trump? Colonel Warshak, answer that. I need to get to Chester. Let me give me a quick answer on that. Does this escalate the pressure on Trump, do you think, these immunity deals, and what's behind it?
Well, I don't think it's going to affect it at all. It's basically going to perhaps shed some more light on the other cases that we've been talking about. And it might add to it, but I don't think he's going to reveal anything that is going to affect Trump. And it all depends on, you know, what Trump and his people have said to at least Weisselberg prior.
So you don't think Weisselberg's going to sink anything, but what about this David Pecker from the Enquirer? You think he's a problem?
I don't think so.
Yeah. They keep talking about
Brenda Trump's, and yeah. I think he might throw a fastball on them.
Interesting. Hold on now. I got to get a comment from Jennifer on this. Now, Jennifer, this is kind of funny. I like the way the Colonel says a fastball on them. And I'm wondering if they're going to get a fastball, a curve, or a sinker, quite frankly. But I'm wondering, what do you think with the immunity deals, quickly, Jennifer, with this David Pecker, the head of the Inquirer, and what a name, David Pecker. I mean, I can't imagine walking in the room and saying, good morning, Mr. Pecker. But okay, that's the way it is, Jennifer. So talk to me on what you think about that. What do you
think? I'll tell you this. Somebody's going to get a fastball. I don't know how, I don't know who, and I don't know when. But here's the thing. You can't look at a president in the last 50, 100, 250 years. Yeah. You can't look at a president of the United States of America that hasn't had a tie, a connection, or a close employment tie with somebody who may or may not have committed a crime. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, this is the first time in history we've ever had to care about it this much. Mm. You look at some of the connections from Obama and other people. I think Trump is waiting for the day when he can finally land a bombshell to say, look at this. Look at all the ties that other people had. Nobody cared. Mm. The one person that exposed a highlight on a very problematic terrorist type tie of Barack Obama was somebody who was then later convicted of conspiracy crimes and all kinds of corruption things. I think I believe that was Dinesh D'Souza and some other people who came out against him. So nobody has seen what we're seeing now with Trump. I don't think Trump would say that everybody affiliated with him has been innocent, but that he would definitely say that there has been a two-faced Hippocratic way, and that he's going to want to know now what the swamp is trying to hide by coming after his guys or people that anybody who's ever talked to Donald Trump when he's not the first one to have had problematic ties before. So I think he wants to show why the swamp is as dangerous as he said it was from day one.
Yeah, yeah. That's wow. You gotta love politics in America, people. I gotta tell you, it's listen to Jennifer Colonel Worcester. It's just amazing. I mean, really, it is. Let me talk about Jeff Sessions a moment here. I want to read you a couple of tweets here, real quickly here, that are fascinating. Just from this week here with Jeff Sessions, and this one person, V Still, says here, he's playing the role he's assigned. When the time is right, the silent bullet will come out, and things will move pretty quickly. Remember, we have 45K plus sealed indictments waiting so far. So someone's been writing and orchestrating them. This is this one tweet. I want to read this other one. On this other tweet from Bill Mitchell says, Jeff Sessions is about to drop the hammer on hashtag deep state. The last part of this thing is to make it look like he and Trump are enemies. Wow. They aren't. Sessions is a patriot and loves Trump, maybe more than anyone in D.C. You'll see. Wow. And hashtag slow walker, he ends with. So when I read you those couple of tweets, and there's a funny one here from Christine Ryder. She says, I think I saw Jeff Sessions on the back of a milk carton. But anyways, I love to get the beat of the people out there, Colonel Warshuk. And you hear those tweets that some people still have confidence in Jeff Sessions, but a lot of people have lost that confidence. There's been a public whole theater this week, again, with Sessions and Trump. He comes out, the president says, I put in an attorney general that never took control of the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions. It's sort of an incredible thing, he says, the president throws out on Twitter. I know a lot of people from the inside here have lost confidence in this attorney general. I know you have supported him and stayed behind him. Do you still do that at this point? Do you think, as some of those people have tweeted, that this is all theater again for the American public? Or do you think this relationship is as bad off as it appears?
Well, I've always thought that from the day he recused himself from the Russian investigation, that this is all an inside plan, a deception, and I still think it is. Look at, we all know Trump's modus operandi. If he gets tired of somebody or no longer likes somebody or doesn't appreciate what they're doing, he fires them. Mm-hmm. That's well said. He's fired a lot of people. If Sessions is doing such a bad job, what's taking him so long to fire him? Mm-hmm. And that's why I continue to believe this is something, there's something to it. And like I said before, we will never know what the president is actually doing and thinking, but he is a master of the media. Mm-hmm. He knows how to play the media. Every election season, we always wait for the October surprise and nothing ever transpires. I think Trump will have an October surprise.
Interesting.
He will do it because he's not going to throw out something bogus that doesn't hold. He's the magician. He's the ringmaster. Well, he likes a big show. Yeah. I think he will do something that will be.
Interesting. Jennifer, tell me, Jeff Sessions, do you have confidence in this attorney general at this point? Do you think this relationship has soured?
No, I don't think it's soured. I do have confidence in Attorney General Sessions. I also know that at the same time, if Donald Trump came out there loving Jeff Sessions and saying that everything he did was right, the entire media in the world would hate him. But now with Trump's tweets and all this stuff he's saying against Jeff Sessions, look how the media started to turn around and say, you know, Sessions isn't such a bad guy. Let's listen to him, which means they're going to pay a lot more credence to what happens with Jeff Sessions. He knows exactly how to play this media like a fiddle.
All right. All right. Well, listen. I will just leave it to you two. But clearly, I'm not sure. I hope you're right. It's very interesting to hear your input. And Jennifer, I didn't know that you were going to kind of agree on that, but you do. And when I hear the public persona on both sides of that argument, it is a really interesting debate here going on with Sessions. I'll be real curious to see what happens. I wish I had the same confidence you two had in the Attorney General, but I think that escapes me at this moment here, friends. Big thank you to Colonel Jim Warshak and Attorney Jennifer Breeden both for being here on Viewpoint. The murder of Molly Tibbetts, killed by an illegal alien, and this is unbelievable what's happened here with this story here. We'll pick that up as well here. Also, we have a big discussion at the end here with some very powerful people to talk about the Catholic Church. The Pope speaks out as well on that. We'll pick all that up next as Viewpoint rolls out.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, friends, joining you back here on Viewpoint, Molly Tibbetts, the young woman there in Iowa that was murdered, as her father and boyfriend and family were playing for her to be returned. It was all over the national airwaves throughout the couple of weeks here. Sadly, she was killed, and where this story takes a very vicious turn, friends, is she was killed, as you know, by an illegal alien, an immigrant who was here in the country illegally. And isn't that ironic that that is how this all ended in the life of this beautiful young woman here? We will pick that up here at the top of the segment here. Welcome on, please. Ilana Friedman is here. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Ilana, trained in Israel, focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. She's a columnist right here at America Out Loud, friends. Dennis Santiago is also here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. Subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. He's also a weekly columnist, and these are great commentators and voices right here at America Out Loud. Joining us today in our panel discussion, we are honored to have on Ray Brookstein. Sometimes goes by Ray Ray out in the social media world. He is the author of a book that's called The Trump Chronicle. Again, he's a conservative, a poet, and some very interesting messages he puts out in his work, in these poems. He has sort of documented the president's campaign and his first year in office in a very interesting way in this book. And he did a very interesting piece, friends, on Molly Tibbetts, which is why I asked Ray Ray to join us today. And it's a pleasure to have him on as well. Dennis, I want to start with you on this here. But how did this criminal get through the E-Verify and have valid credentials with all of this?
Well, the way they do it, and it's a fairly common practice, is they steal somebody else's identity. And, you know, you pick up a social security number, you pick up the information that goes along with it. That kind of stuff is for sale. There's a market for it. Next thing you know, you punch that stuff into the system, and guess what? It comes back, says you're a fine, upstanding citizen or permanent resident of the United States with or somebody with a work permit. And there you go. You're in.
Yeah, because the employer said they were shocked. They had no idea, what have you. So, Dennis, what's the answer to that, to curbing? Do you have a quick resolution for this, the E-Verify thing and the credential part of it?
I have been an advocate for a very long time. And I'm an immigrant myself, right? You know, like, you know what? I carry my passport with me. I carry positive identification that I am a citizen of the United States of America. I see no reason why we shouldn't have that. Every other country on this planet has not just that, but they have biometric identification out there now. And you know who paid for most of the biometric identification in all these other countries in the world? We did. You know, we just don't do it here. And the reason we don't do it here is because it's political.
A lot of Democrats seem to be in favor of this open border sanctuary city. I mean, it's all over the place in a lot of these states. Very laxed rules, kind of just let people come in and do what they're going to do. And then you got the gang problem, you got the drug problem, you got criminal problems, you got all kinds of problems going on here. How much do you see this, Ilana, being an issue for the November elections? And now with this another death by the hands of an illegal immigrant like this, does this become a big issue again in the elections? Because remember, this is a lot of what Trump ran on in 2016.
Yeah, I think it is going to play a role in the elections. The country is deeply divided on these issues. And by the way, just referring back to your earlier comments, the employer of this person who murdered Molly did not use E-Verify. And so I don't know how effective E-Verify is. I like the biometrics much better, and as Dennis said, they're used all over the world, and very effectively. But the more important thing is that this split in the American psyche is something that I think we need to look at very, very seriously, because it's going to destroy us. Mm-hmm. You take a look at the past election, the presidential election, and see how much damage has been done since then because one side refuses to accept the results. So you have this situation with Molly Tibbetts. The situation seems pretty clear. She was murdered brutally and totally unnecessarily, right, by this person, mm-hmm, who claims to have blacked out and doesn't remember any of it, which I consider to be total rubbish. Mm-hmm. We have one more situation. It's another Sarah Root. It's another Kate Steinle. And the list goes on and on. Yeah. And we have to stop it.
Yeah. Ray Brookstein, let me bring you into the conversation here and talk about, you hear the stats I just put out there, Ray. Now, you as an American poet, as somebody who takes these things, obviously you speak from the heart, you get moved by something, and then you put the words down and you make a point. You have a message, you make a point. What was it about Molly Tibbetts and this story that fueled you and really inflamed you that you thought it was time to write a piece on this story?
Well, it was just one more compelling reason to become a voice for millions of people, mm-hmm, who may have difficulty expressing this unexpressible event. So as these events happen, I chronicle. I'm not always, perfect, but I think I try to speak from the viewpoint of millions of people that feel, mm-hmm, this separation in this country and just are throwing their hands up.
Well, I have to tell you, Ray, you did exactly that for me. When I did see your message out in social media, I was very, very moved by it. And I thought, wow, this man gets it. I'm going to ask you to do us a favor right now. And the piece you wrote on that, what is Molly Tibbetts' tribute piece, but also to bring awareness to the problem? What is the title of that, Ray? Is there a title to that poem, that particular poem?
Yes. The title of the poem is simply Pray for Molly.
Pray for Molly. Now let's stop there. Pray for Molly. I would like you to do us the honor, if you would, right now, and do a live read of that poem, Pray for Molly. And I want people to listen to what you say and what you have in that. Would you please do that?
I would be delighted, and thank you for the honor and the opportunity to do so. Pray for Molly. My head is just fuming. I've had an hour of sleep. Our hearts broken in Iowa, while half the nation won't weep. No mainstream coverage, it's swept under the mat. They'd rather praise Mueller because some tax forms were crap. Heartless, emotionless, numbed almost dead. These Dems thirst for power while the criminals are bred. To colored straws and balloons, they're applying the heat while illegals and needles Littoral Street. Our anger is raging. We cannot sit back. Time we took back the reins, put our nation on track. Take the disgust we are feeling, bring pressure to bear. The wall must be built, fill the justice's chair. Alas, come November, the vote must be red. The same color of blood our dear Molly has shed.
Wow. Yeah, you can see why I was moved, Ilana Dennis. Listeners, you know why I was moved by that tribute you did, Ray. Your work is impeccable, Ray. I've looked at the book, and a lot of your work is really incredible. I think you're going to be a voice we're going to hear regularly on our network, because I'm going to invite you back again and again as I start to look more at your work, because I think there's a message in there, how you can take it and put it so eloquently in just a few words to drive a point home. And so I really appreciate your work and that you do. We'll have the links of all of that, of what Ray has done with this, in the post when this goes there to the front page of America Out Loud, friends, later today here. I need to move on with the rest of the agenda here. Ray, thank you for being paying that tribute to Molly here and being part of this conversation. I look forward to chatting with you again, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Malcolm, and thank you, other guests.
Thank you. Okay, friends, let's get on here now to Duncan Hunter, Chris Collins. I want to ask you both here, are these random investigations or targeting of political adversaries? So let me give folks the background on this. So Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter and his wife, Margaret, were indicted in a 47-page document for misuse of $260,000 in campaign funds, and a year-long investigation, by the way, by the DOJ. Here's the thing I find a bit unbelievable. Dennis, I want to ask you this. Who in the Justice Department do you think is conducted this investigation, number one, if you even would you know that or speculate on that? And here's the follow-up to that. This investigation concluded, I understand, close to 18 months ago. The election is about 80 days away or less now. Is that a coincidence, or why now all of a sudden, do you think? Do you draw any parallels there, or what?
So there's been a cry from the public to do more. And the manifestation of it is that the Justice Department has started doing more, and they've started to go through and find these guys that are doing things that are way out of the box. And they found a couple of them. And it turns out, you know, there's things that you're not supposed to do with your campaign funds.
Yeah.
And that's going to be examined in greater detail, I think. And you certainly shouldn't be doing insider trading.
So you don't think there's political, bottom line, you don't think there's political motivations between the fact that they're in the part of the GOP? You don't see that at all, no?
What I see is the Justice Department finding problems where they are. I do see that the Democrats are taking, the fact that the happenstance is that they found these guys first and they're going after these guys first. Right. And they're taking advantage of it politically, which, you know, can you really blame the Democrats for hanging
imagine
on?
Imagine that.
They can find. But that's politics in this country, right, man? You know, that's the way the ball goes. But, you know.
Yeah, my belief is that Washington is so thoroughly corrupt that I suspect that there is barely a legislator in the House or Senate who isn't tainted in one way or another. The problem the Republicans are facing now is that the Democrats' opposition research and subsequent attacks are so much more effective than their own that they are allowing the Democrats to attack them without any kind of counterpunch. It's not a coincidence, by the way, that the first two Republican congressmen to endorse then-candidate Donald Trump in 2015 were Duncan Hunter and Chris Collins.
Right.
And they're the ones who are now standing in the judicial spotlight.
So you think there's something to that, Ilana?
I think there's a lot to it, and I think that this is so highly political and that the Republicans are so inept at what they're doing. Look at what has been passed by.
I agree with her that they have been inept. It's been awful.
But they've been ineffective. Hillary Clinton is still waltzing around in her pantsuit, or in her muumuu, whatever it is she's wearing today. And she was guilty of something close to treason.
Ilana, stay with you a moment. Do you think, first of all, Jeff Sessions, we were talking in the earlier segment about Jeff Sessions and the conflict this week again with the president here. Now you see all of these things happening in the DOJ. What do you think becomes of Sessions? Does he get through the election and then the president replaces him after the midterm? And do you have any confidence left in Jeff Sessions at all, Ilana?
I actually don't. I think he's been a very weak player in this whole thing. He should have been on top of Mueller from the beginning and wasn't.
Right.
I don't understand why. I understand why the president appointed him, because we all thought he was going to be good at his job.
Right.
But he has turned out to be very bad at his job, and the president has not removed him, and that I do not understand.
Well, the political implications.
I don't understand these tweet swipes at him. Yeah. When the president should be doing his his job and removing him, because Sessions is not doing his
well,
job.
Well, Ilana, it's I mean, I hear you, and my heart is exactly with what you're asking there. But it's basically what I'm always told back. It's the political implications. Does Dennis Santiago have any confidence left for real in this Attorney General Jeff Sessions? Do you think he belongs there still?
I'll use a term that comes out of the 3% military guys to describe Jeff Sessions. That guy is weak sauce. All right. I mean, he was supposed to go in there and clean up.
Well, he said he was doing that this week, Dennis.
Yeah,
you don't buy that,
well,
huh?
he was supposed to do this when he got the job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he said he was from day one. I want to talk about another news story that caught my eye at the very end of the week here in the last couple of days here in the Palestinian funding here. So the Trump administration said, this was just on Friday, I believe it was, said they were canceling more than $200 million. You can't believe, people, how we throw money around in Washington, but $200 million that we give as aid to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and West Bank. Now, many people would say again, why are we funding terrorist groups? And that's been the lead story on this for, my golly, friends, as long as I can remember. That's been the big question mark we can't seem to get an answer to. Trump, again, being unusual as he is, he's cutting the funding here. Of course, they're having, this has become very polarizing and complicated here. Relations between the U.S. administration and the Palestinian Authority are clearly taking a nosedive with this decision. And also, remember, it started with moving the capital to Jerusalem, Israel's capital, the embassy, remember, friends. That's kind of where that started from. But there's always this thing about peace. I mean, we throw that around like a frisbee when it comes to the Middle East. Yeah, peace. We'll just sit them down at the table and we'll have world peace, right? Amazing. Ilana Friedman, I know you're explosive on this topic here. But I can imagine you're really sad and were crying on Friday when they cut the funding to the terror group Palestinians. I'm sure you were crying in your soup, yeah?
Oh, it broke me up. I went out and celebrated. The Trump administration had actually froze a lot of these funds several months ago. But what they did on Friday was announce that they had actually cut $200 million in aid for the Palestinian West Bank and Gaza. And what that means, a lot of people don't know where that money goes. It goes to an organization called UNRWA, which I won't even go into the meaning of it, but it was formed in 1949 after Israel became a state, and it was supposed to take care of the Palestinians and the people who had that. We call them Arabs back then. Palestinians is a made-up name that evolved, but that's another story.
All right, so Dennis, let me get you to opine on this. I know you have a thought or two on this, but you hear Ilana, and I knew she's always passionate about this, clearly. I mean, I think what most Americans and most listeners would ask right now, why should we provide funding to controversial groups like this? Why, Dennis?
Well, okay. So the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, that's what UNRWA stands for,
mm-hmm.
Has a budget of about $1 billion a year. That's the total budget that the UN plans for this. In the past, the United States has paid one-third of that budget.
Wow.
Every year.
Wow.
Every year, whatever that budget is, we pay for, a third of Palestine, okay? And that's been around for a very long time. There was an acrimony in the UN General Assembly. You remember,
right.
Nikki Haley standing up to everybody saying there are consequences for what you are about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the consequences is, the United States is saying, why do we have to pay a third? You know, so our contribution to UNRWA this year is $60 million, down from $360 million the years prior. Mm-hmm. All right?
Right.
What that has done is it has forced the shirking countries, the rest of the countries that are supposed to contribute to this fund, to speed up their payments. Mm-hmm. All right. And so in the last month or so, you know, as this stuff has started to come to a head, you see the European Union countries who, you know, traditionally they kind of wait until the U.S. money has been spent, now being pressured by the U.N. and going, hey, you got to pay up, you know, because like the Uncle Sam is not being the guy that pays for everything anymore. So you time for you to step up. So that what's happening is we're actually forcing the rest of the world to make the choice into what to do with this agency going forward.
And again, this is where I think all of you out there should be outraged, because this is where your tax money is going. And this is what's happening to our country because these buffoons in Washington have been so reckless with it over the last many, many, many decades. Listen, I want to mention to all of you, you hear the voices of Ilana Friedman and the voices of Dennis Santiago. Let me just remind everybody right now, they are two of the most brilliant writers and intellects on our platform, bar none. So you want to check out their weekly columns. Okay. If you haven't already, well, it's a fact. And check out Ilana's book as well. Ilana, the title of your book real quickly is?
Hamas Care and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America.
I mean, so check out her book, friends. There's a link right at the bookstore at America Out Loud, or just go to Amazon and get it. However you get it, just get it so you can read that. And again, two of the most amazing writers and their weekly thoughts and columns at America Out Loud need to be applauded, friends, as all of our experts do. It is just a tremendous accomplishment of this network and this platform to have the brilliance of these people that you're listening to here on this show, Viewpoint, this Sunday today, friends. Well, listen, also, big thank you to Ray Brookstein as well for being on, and the tribute to Molly Tibbetts here. Friends, as Viewpoint rolls on here, next up, the Catholic Church. We have a powerful discussion coming. Pope Francis spoke out about all of this. He had a lot to say about it. Will it ever change? We'll find that out in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Pope Francis comes out yesterday on Saturday as he arrived in Ireland, that he shares the outrage of rank-and-file Catholics over the cover-up, he says, of the repugnant crimes of priests who have raped or molested children. And he vowed that he was committed to ending the scourge, he calls it. Pope Francis has been very outspoken about this here. We're going to take that up next, friends, and speak about the Catholic Church and the role in this problem that has been ongoing. And you've seen it in countries like Chile. You've seen it in other areas around the world, in Brazil. And now we have in Pennsylvania, you've seen here in the States here, a big, big problem of sexual abuse to children here. Please welcome onto the show here our panel discussion. Terry Beatley is here. She is president of Hosea Initiative. She is an author and a host of What If We've Been Wrong right here on America Out Loud, friends. And I have to tell you, if you have not listened to Terry's show, the topics and the conversation she has there is absolutely incredible. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day, Monday through Friday, you'll hear Terry, and she is a fearless woman out on the front lines every day. Also, Fearless, and joining us here today is James Burkan, and he has a master's in theology from Franciscan University. He's a gifted speaker on healing and the gift of self, and John Paul II's Theology of the Body in prisons and conferences around the nation. It's good to have you both here, friends. And so Pope Francis comes out. He says, he makes these comments as he's arriving in Ireland, that he's obviously very upset. Now, he was seeking to respond to a really a global outcry, if you will, over the sex abuse by priests. Francis, again, what he did is he cited the measures taken by his predecessor, Pope Benedict, to respond to the crisis, but it went on further. Reports have said that Benedict never acknowledged the Vatican's role in fueling a culture of cover-up, and Francis provided, they say, no new details in any measures that he would take to sanction the bishops who failed to protect their flocks from predator priests. Wow, there's a lot there to unpack there. Let's take it right there. James, I'm going to start with you on this and say, because that's a loaded statement, what I just put out there and what Pope Francis has come out and said. These cases of child sexual abuse are in the thousands. We don't really even know how many. And there's some very fascinating stats here. And these go back, many cases are saying centuries. Abuse includes, by the way, both boys and girls, some as young as 3 years old, and the majority between the ages of 11 and 14, they say, is the majority, James. And the vast majority of the abused are 78% male. What gives here? What is bringing this up, and is the church doing enough at this point to handle this problem?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Malcolm. I appreciate it. It's an honor and a privilege, and keep up the great work. You know, just right off the bat, you know, it's good to hear Pope Francis talk about it and more needs to be done. At the same time, too, there's a good old cliche, talk is cheap. And right now, I'm not as well versed in the reforms as I'd like to be, but more definitely needs to be done. I think the one thing that we need to bring out is that this predation is not just on children. It's also on seminarians, as we found with McCarrick. You know, they need to have... Pope Francis talks about a zero tolerance policy, and it needs to start taking place. He needs to root out the scandal in the Vatican with the bank. There was a homosexually fueled orgy that took place in the Vatican. Wow. And we have this horror going on with Pennsylvania, which Matt Walsh, I was listening to his podcast. He said it reads out of a Hollywood story or a Hollywood story. But, you know, this is real. It's an absolute nightmare. And of course, prayers go out to the victims. But I believe he sent a cardinal over to the United States of America now to try to root out the problem, as he did so in Chile. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Malcolm, I'm honestly waiting to see more done. Needs to be done. And it's just, you know, he needs to have a zero tolerance policy. I mean, I know this is a very sensitive topic. So, you know, we need to root out. I mean, the whole homosexual network needs to be rooted out. And Bishop Morlino, for your readers, all they have to do is type in Bishop Morlino, MORLINO, of Madison, Wisconsin. He put out a great article on what needs to be done.
Okay, all right.
Malcolm,
well, you're looking for more action, waiting. Is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, you're saying, absolutely. Which is very interesting. Terry, let's pick it up there now. You hear some of the comments here from James about the action here. Again, this isn't a problem that just happened yesterday. I mean, this has been building, well, by golly, for centuries, but certainly decades and decades. And yet, there seems to be a lack of accountability, which is kind of, I think, possibly, Terry, what Pope Francis is saying as well, maybe at this point? Or what's your hope right now that will happen?
I think we have to identify what the problem is. And James, you did nail it on the head. It's the evil of homosexual clericalism. And we picked up those words from, you know, Church Militant, where how they identified it. It's like, well, if they're going to call it clericalism, mm-hmm. it's not just clericalism. It's this infiltrated network of homosexuals who have infiltrated the Catholic Church on purpose. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on for, you know, basically a century, of course, probably longer. But as far as a systematic infiltration. And this is not about hating the sinner. This is about hating the sin of homosexuality. It's a slippery slope, and you can't let your sexual desires master who you are. You have to master those. And until our bishops, our cardinals, and the Pope can identify the accurate problem, mm-hmm. which is homosexuality. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, I say it's not even about the child abuse. It's the homosexuality which led to the child abuse. So that's what I say. But until they've got the back to identify it and to flush it out, right. to fire the bishops, to fire the cardinals, right. we're going to have more of this.
You're both saying that more needs to be done. I'm hearing you loud and clear that more needs to be done and to the point. I want to talk a moment here about, again, celibacy specifically versus marriage. And James, I want you to listen to me and then Terry, you as well here. Let me bring listeners into this point here. 9th century, St. Ulrich, a holy bishop, argued from scripture and common sense that the only way to purify the church from the worst excesses of celibacy was to permit priests to marry. Now, Peter, the first pope, and the apostles that Jesus chose were for the most part married men. Why did this change, James? And should the church really look at this?
Right, right. Well, I believe, you know, it's a very legitimate point. I've heard plenty of my friends talk about it, and I've heard the argument we wouldn't have this issue if priests were allowed to marry. Well, the very simple answer to that is, first of all, these predations are not – now, I'm going to go back to Church Militant real quick, and Michael Voris found that 75% of these predations were male-on-male, so that's homosexually based, and only 25% were heterosexual.
Right.
That's what Michael Voris says on Church Militant. So if we allow these priests to marry, first of all, then we would have to allow homosexual marriage. That goes against the doctrine of the Catholic Church.
Wow.
Because we need to make this point very clear, Malcolm. Mm-hmm. It, not because we hate homosexuals or we're so rigid about marriage.
Right.
It's because we revere marriage so much. It is a beautiful institution.
Mm-hmm.
It's an institution where you vow to be faithful, to give yourself fully, completely to your partner, to the one.
Right.
As a man, to the woman I love, I give myself to her fully. Mm-hmm. I'd be faithful to her. I'd give her myself to her freely. I'd hold nothing back. And I would have openness to life. Those are the wedding vows, as we say in the theology of the body. They are meant to be made flesh through the sexual union.
Mm-hmm.
And the last point I'll make real quick, Malcolm, is that John Paul II did a beautiful expose in the theology of the body regarding clerical celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not say that it's an eradication of your sexual desires or your sexuality. It is the fulfillment of it. For example, not every man is called to be a priest, but human sexuality, sex inside marriage, the marital relationship is meant to point us to one beautiful thing, and that is our relationship with the Almighty God
mm-hmm.
for all eternity. You know, the sexual experiences, the joy, the passion you share together. And it's not all about sex. We
mm-hmm.
all, you know, as mature adults, we all understand that. But that points you to heaven. Now, where I need to research more on celibacy, I'm just going to tell you right now,
mm-hmm.
As far as what that saint said. But a priest is given a very special grace to live the reality of the kingdom now. Jesus Christ said that in the kingdom you will neither be married nor given in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we no longer need sexuality, because all of our desires will be fulfilled. You know, we will no longer – I misspoke. We will be sexual beings in heaven, being in that we'll be male and female, but we will not need sex to point us to God. Why? Because we're with God. And those priests live that reality.
All right, but James, hold on. When you say they live that reality, I want to stop a moment and say to you this. But these
sure.
are the here's where I think a lot of people, back to the common sense part of that conversation, would have a problem. These
okay.
are human beings in this reality. I mean, they are human beings. They are in
sure.
a human body in this reality. Now, there are certain needs and thoughts and urges that you know the good Lord has built into human beings.
Absolutely.
And sex happens to be one of those. Quite frankly,
yes.
whether and let me say a couple of things here to this point, please. As a layman in this, I mean, if homosexuality is the problem, as you and Terry are saying, then somehow that's got to be prohibited. They've got to do a better job when they're bringing these priests and promoting people to bishops and cardinals and other. I mean, they've got to do a better job of seeking that out because, you know, I'm sorry, but that's a place they should be discriminatory and not. If this is the problem, homosexuality, and it's taken over a good part of the church, and that's where the problem is coming from, then don't bring them into the church. I'm sorry, but don't bring them into the church to begin with.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
Absolutely.
Malcolm, I totally agree with you. The problem is, as more and more of these people have infiltrated the church, and they've tried to neutralize this issue, and
right.
then I personally see it accelerating under the last 4 years of Obama, and I'm not blaming all this on Obama by any stretch of the imagination, but when he, all of a sudden evolved on his position of marriage, mm-hmm. what happened in the political sphere, so political correctness, it's like, homosexuality, now two men can get married, two women can get married, and now this is all about love. And everything begins to get neutralized. And if you dare to criticize, oh my gosh, you get labeled a homophobe. Mm-hmm. And so right. now what's happening in the Catholic Church, you have some really, really off the rail priests like Father James Martin, mm-hmm. who tries to make it, if you criticize homosexuality at all, mm-hmm. you're a homophobe, you're full of hate, blah, 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 which is wrong. And the problem is so now you've got bishops who are homosexuals themselves, and wow. the cardinals wow. who are homosexuals themselves, and cardinals who are communists. And the problem is, it's all embedded.
It is time that clearly somebody takes a lead role here. And I want to say this to you both. Now, listen, I grew up as a young boy in the Nazarene Church. So we grew up with a pastor or minister who was a married man by chance. In many cases, in our particular one, they had young children. They had a family. There was a family life there. They were human beings, and they acted like human beings. And we didn't get a lot of that stuff going on where these problems were there. I just really have to put a magnifying glass back in question. I mean, I think the point of homosexuality is one point that you've made, and I get that. And there are ways to rule that out. They've got to do a better job of screening all these people. I mean, that's where that comes from. But still, the point, James, of asking human beings to not engage in anything at all but to be married to our Lord, our God, when they are human. I have a hard sure. time. I can't rationalize this as a human being myself. Could we ever see it in our lifetime, possibly, potentially, that the Catholic Church may relax that a little bit and allow these priests and church officials to have a normal human life? Is that just far stretched, or could that ever happen?
That Malcolm, there's I'm kind of have the head and the heart thing going on. You know, my right. heart says this, my head says this. Right. Now, having said that, I mean, for me now, look, I will say this: I need to be better versed in it. Mm-hmm. If you want to bring me on, we'll have a debate on on celibacy. I will definitely do research.
I think it would be an interesting conversation, James.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's something that has.
Because I don't have the answers either
right now. Yeah, yeah.
Can a healthy, proper human being, can a man live his entire life without having any sex whatsoever? And we can't answer that today. We're gonna leave the thought right there for everybody. And I'm gonna invite James back another time, and you all, Terry, to talk more about it. I don't have the answers for it, but I do have a lot of questions. I will say that.
Absolutely.
And there are real questions I think people are asking out there. And I have to tell you, how do I know they're real questions? Because we get these questions asked all the time from the network, from listeners and readers who want to know why and how come. And so anyways, I leave you with that thought. And not to be a smart guy here, friends, but another group that needs to be looked in is the Boy Scouts of America is another problem. Sure. So not to be a funny guy here. But again, this is truth. This is what we talk about, the truth. It's not popular conversation, people, but it is real conversation. And it's what people need to hear. And what are the answers? We need to find the answers, whatever they may be. And But I can't condone what goes on. I hope and I pray that Pope Francis comes out and lays it down and will not accept it, and does some of the changes that Terry, you, and James, you're saying that should be done at this point to hold them accountable. They should be held accountable not just into the Vatican walls, but they should be held accountable into the town square, so we can all Absolutely. See them being held accountable. That's what I'll say. Friends, it's a big conversation here on this, and again, as the whole conversation today was, we invite you back always to AmericaOutloud.com. There is so much going on there. It's an amazing platform of the best writers, our national columnists, our talk show host, our podcast host, the videos. I mean, it is the one place in this nation you will find more truth and find more content than anywhere. And it's all real. It's all right there for you to dive into. Please take a look. Share it with friends. Tell people about this awesome. Big thank you here again to Terry Beatley and James Burkon and all of our guests here on Viewpoint this Sunday as we continue on here, friends. Again, please remember that Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle.
While we don't discriminate against an opinion, the main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.